China is the greatest threat to America, and I'll tell you why in a moment. But first, there was another mass shooting recently on Chicago's South Side. At least 15 people were shot and 2 killed in Chicago's Grand Crossing neighborhood in the 6700 block of Chicago Avenue. It happened at 4:40 a.m. at a party when most rational people were home asleep. 4 guns were recovered at the scene. The victims ranged from 20 to 44 years old and included men and women. The incident marks the second time in less than a year that 15 people were shot in a single incident in Chicago, following a shooting of 15 people last July outside a funeral home on 79th Street. If Black Lives Matter, and I believe they do, why is this allowed to happen? Why is the Black Lives Matter leadership silent on these Chicago shootings? When I volunteered for the Navy in October 1960, I found myself among black and white Americans in boot camp. I remember a tall, lanky black kid from the South Side of Chicago named Clifford Williams. Clifford was full of energy and always joking around, and I enjoyed being around him. I've often wondered whatever happened to Clifford when he returned to that violent hellhole. It matters to me because his black life mattered to me. For a brief time, we were shipmates working together to make our country safer. Not a black country or a white country, but an American country. Every life is precious. The color of one's skin does not have a bearing on it. We are all God's children. It's okay to show outrage when a life is taken in a solo incident, but it is not okay to overlook the mass killings of black people in Chicago that's been going on for decades. I pray that Clifford Williams and his family have escaped death on Chicago's South Side, but the odds are not great. Instead of Black Lives Matter's leaders socking away millions of dollars for themselves, why can't we demand that they stop finding single incidents of black deaths and deal with the carnage in Chicago? Clifford, if you're out there, my friend, I care. While America obsesses over the coronavirus that China sent upon the world, there is little thought given by the average, ordinary American to the greater danger China presents to the United States and to the world at large. I share credit today with Abigail Ning of CBS, Jim Garamone of Defense.gov, and Kathy Gilsenian of The Atlantic for their research, which I include with my own. We now have a president, Joe Biden, whose family is deeply indebted to China. There are more Biden family skeletons buried in China than the fallen at Arlington Cemetery. To be blunt, Joe Biden will never stand up to China as Trump did because he has too much to lose. It's strange how Democrats were able to sneak Biden into the Oval Office and at the same time managed to stop all talk about Joe's son, Hunter Biden, and the multi-millions of dollars he was able to extract from China as the vice president's son. The inquiries about Hunter Biden's dealings in China suddenly went away when Joe Biden became president. Our dishonest mainstream media shows no interest in getting to the bottom of Hunter Biden's ripoffs using his father's government position. Meanwhile, Beijing has been forthcoming about its long-term goals and is the most serious threat to the United States, according to a string of national security advisors. James Jones, who served as the national security advisor under former President Barack Hussein Obama, said that we need to take that very seriously. One Chinese goal is total control of its own people, using technology. He said they're making astonishing progress to control every single citizen, whatever he or she does. They're giving grades for citizenship, which will affect what jobs they're going to be able to hold, the travel they can do, and everything else. Where they are moving is scary. They obviously want to export that to other countries. Jones said Beijing is using a Trojan horse strategy to gain influence in many parts of the world. They penetrate the economies, buy up everything they can, paying off everyone they can, and getting a chokehold on the economy as much as they can. And then they make demands for the behavior of foreign governments. One of the things that should concern us all is that we've stopped talking about values in the world, even in the democratic countries. We seldom talk about human rights. Jones was asked if the U.S. should support Hong Kong, even if it puts trade talks with China at risk. He said, quote, "Is trade more important than human values?" End quote. Jones noted the U.S. didn't trade with the Soviet Union during the Cold War until the Berlin Wall came down and the regime collapsed. In China's case, the Biden administration is asleep at the switch. We should be greatly concerned about the degree to which China is strategically intent on replacing the United States as the most dominant culture in the world. We should be competing with China everywhere they are in the world, Jones said, including Africa and other places. Competing on technology is more serious, but the U.S. can win. However, it will take great leadership. Does anybody truly believe that Joe Biden will confront China, given the chokehold they have on Hunter Biden? Remember the email that called for 10% of the Chinese payoffs to Hunter Biden to be held for the big guy? There was no bigger guy in those dealings than the vice president, Joe Biden. Echoing Jones, a top Pentagon commander told lawmakers that China poses the greatest long-term threat in the 21st century, alleging that Beijing's most pernicious approach to the region includes a whole-party effort to coerce, corrupt, and co-opt governments, businesses, organizations, and the people of the Indo-Pacific. In stark contrast to our free and open vision, the Communist Party of China promotes a closed and authoritarian system through internal oppression, as well as external aggression. Admiral Phil Davidson, the commander of the United States Indo-Pacific Command, told members of the House Armed Services Committee that as China continues to increase the size of the People's Liberation Army and advance their joint capabilities, the military balance in the Indo-Pacific is becoming more unfavorable for the United States and its allies. The admiral said, "With this imbalance, we are accumulating risks that may embolden China to unilaterally change the status quo before our forces may be able to deliver a correct response." The greatest danger the United States and our allies face in the region is the erosion of conventional vis-a-vis the People's Republic of China. Absent a convincing deterrent, China will be emboldened to continue to take action to supplant the established rules-based international order and the values represented in the vision for a free and open Indo-Pacific. The admiral continued, "Our deterrence posture in the Indo-Pacific must demonstrate the capability, the capacity, and the will to convince Beijing unequivocally that a cost of achieving their objectives by the use of military force is simply too high. Our number one job is to keep the peace, but we absolutely must be prepared to fight and win should competition turn to conflict. The Chinese are trying to basically impose national law on the international regime that provides for the freedom of navigation and freedom of the seas. It's not just the naming or renaming of features that have had long-standing names in the region. It's the redefinition of what they might be, because rocks, inlets, islands all have their own specific navigational rights associated with them, as well as their continued militarization of the features they built out early in the last decade. China's continued militarization is to deter not only the United States, but truly cow all U.S. allies and partners in the region, and certainly the South China Sea claimants, from their absolute rights to operate, and those rights that they enjoy for economic extraction of freedom of the seas freedom of the airways, etc. Since the 1990s, successive U.S. administrations have emphasized the importance of the Indo-Pacific region. The region itself contains four of the five priority security challenges identified by the Department of Defense: China, Russia, North Korea, and the violent extremist organizations. The Indo-Pacific region also experiences frequent natural and man-made disasters, the negative impacts of climate change, rapid pollution growth, rapid population growth, drug and human trafficking, and, of course, disease and pandemics. This region accounts for 60% of the world's current gross product and contributes more than two-thirds to the present global economic growth. In less than 10 years, the region will host two-thirds of the world's population and two-thirds of the global economy. The admiral said that building allies and partners in the region is extremely important. He specifically highlighted the potential power of what many are calling the Quad: India, Japan, Australia, and the United States. Unfortunately, many Americans have never considered that the United States might be able to lose a war with China. It's not that the Chinese Communist Party would take over Washington, but in its own region, China has the advantage. If a war broke out between the United States and China, the clash between two of the world's most powerful militaries would be horrific, and the United States could very well lose. That's a concern among current and former defense officials and military analysts, one of whom who said last year that in war games simulating great power conflict in which the United States fights Russia and China, the United States loses. Admiral Philip Davidson, who oversees U.S. military forces in Asia and China, said the greatest long-term strategic threat to the United States and the rules-based international order is China. He described China's rapid military buildup of nearly every domain: air, sea, land, space, and cyber, and said that while China's capabilities don't outnumber America's in the region for now, it's possible, even probable, that they could overtake the United States within the next 5 years. But the sheer number of ships, missiles, planes, and people don't tell the whole story. What already gives the Chinese the advantage is geography. The Obama administration's ill-fated Asia pivot did not prevent the growth of China's military and economic power in the region as they built artificial islands, embedded itself in key infrastructure projects, and invested more and more into its military. As president, Donald Trump called into question whether the United States would defend its treaty allies in the Pacific, such as Japan, with complaints about the expense. The question is, what could actually cause the United States to fight China? What if China invades and occupies Taiwan, a Democratic U.S. partner and arms customer, as they have threatened to do? Would America actually risk World War III? What if China forces its claim to the Senkaku Islands, which the United States considers to belong to Japan? Does that fall within America's treaty commitments to defend its ally? There's no guarantee that a U.S. president would resort to war in either case. But these are among the scenarios war gamers at the RAND Corporation have studied to see if the United States could prevent China from claiming territory by force. It's not clear that the United States could do that. Notably, the likeliest U.S.-China war scenarios take place in Asia, and it's not that a Chinese victory means the Chinese Communist Party takes over Washington, but that the U.S. can't successfully eject China from Japanese-claimed territory or Taiwan. In an attempt to do so, besides cyber attacks, the United States could attack Chinese forces from the air or sea. The problem is that China has spent at least the past 20 years, partly informed by observations of how the U.S. conducted the Gulf War in the 90s, preparing for exactly this kind of conflict, and investing in defenses that could violently thwart a U.S. approach. China has missiles that can sink ships. It has missiles that can down airplanes. And it has missiles that could theoretically reach U.S. regional bases in Japan and Guam, leaving planes and runways vulnerable to attack. Many Chinese observers suggest that missile strikes on U.S. air bases could be a part of the opening salvos of a war. Shutting down such a base, even for a matter of days, according to the RAND study, could be enough to change the course of the conflict. David Ochmanek is a senior international and defense researcher at RAND, and he said that the Chinese don't have to comprehensively defeat the United States military in order to achieve their near-term objectives. He said, if their objective is to overrun Taiwan, that, in principle, can be accomplished in a finite time period, measured in days to weeks. Ochmanek participated in the RAND war games that showed the United States losing. He said, it's not just that they'll be attacking air bases in the region. They'll be attacking aircraft carriers at sea. They'll be attacking our sensors in space. They'll be attacking our communication links that largely run through space. They'll be corrupting the databases in our command system. They're going to try to suppress us in every dimension that they can. They will try. But it's also worth noting that many of these capabilities are untested and that, in contrast to the United States, China does not have a lot of experience actually using its weapons in combat. Yet the growth of Chinese capabilities represents a big change from about 20 years ago when President Bill Clinton sent aircraft carriers near the Taiwan Strait to deter Chinese threats against the island. China, at that time, had been firing missiles toward Taiwan, but its missile arsenal was far less capable and precise than it is today. Chris Broz, the former director of the Senate Armed Forces Committee, said that when that carrier was deployed by President Clinton, the Chinese couldn't even find it. But China has spent 25 years not only figuring out how to find systems like that, but how to overwhelm them with very large volumes of precision weapons. If the United States were to deploy an aircraft carrier near the strait when there was a real possibility of conflict, Broz said, I would not want to be on that aircraft carrier. For now, the United States is countering China in calibrated ways that send a message of displeasure, but that are not likely to provoke an aggressive response from Beijing. The United States has stepped up its pace on sending Navy ships through the strait, as well as its freedom of navigation exercises in the South China Sea. France and Britain have also conducted such exercises. And the United States was, under President Trump, competing with or confronting China outside of the military realm as well, slapping high tariffs on Chinese imports in pursuit of a fair trade deal and banning the Chinese firm Huawei from doing business in the United States. That all ended when Joe Biden took office in the White House. While the United States knows a lot about China's capabilities, discerning its intent is another question. John McLaughlin, a former acting director of the CIA, now teaches at Johns Hopkins University and noted that Chinese officials have said that they aim to be a global power. But what that really means is not clear. Are they trying to build a defensive buffer zone around their borders? A lot of countries do that. Or is their intent more sinister? Nearly a decade ago, then-Defense Secretary Robert Gates warned about the dangers of a high-end war and said that any defense secretary who advised sending a land army into Asia, the Middle East, or Africa should have their head examined. The likely cost of such a conflict have only risen since then, and so has the reluctance of a commander-in-chief to get involved in expensive foreign entanglements. And there's another uncertainty. War games are one thing, and reality is another. Intangibles, such as training, could affect the outcome. One thing is certain, and that is any outbreak of war between the United States and China would endanger the entire world. Donald Trump and his stern approach to China is gone, replaced by a feeble man in Joe Biden, who is not likely to oppose the country that has so many secrets to expose about the Biden family's greed. I thank you for listening to this bonus commentary today. I'll be back again, God willing, next week, same time, same station, and God bless America.